Welcome to our colleagues from the media. My name is Melinda St. Louis, and I am the director of Public Citizens Medicare for All campaign, and I'll be moderating today's call, which marks the 55th anniversary of Medicare. Since July 30th, 1965, Medicare has provided a lifeline to Americans over 65. This immensely popular program was intended as a down payment to eventually provide guaranteed health care for all. And yet, 55 years later, we are the only wealthy country in the world that treats health care as a privilege for those who can afford it instead of as a right. The coronavirus pandemic has shown how the for-profit U.S. healthcare system has failed Americans, failed workers, businesses, and it's exacerbated racial disparities in healthcare. Public Citizen, along with other organizations, Physicians for National Health Program, Business Leaders for Healthcare Transformation, Labor Campaign for Single Payer, and Healthcare Now, and many others have been collecting stories from our members and constituents about their healthcare struggles during this pandemic. And we want to make sure that these stories are told in the media. The tough part really was sorting through the many tragic stories of unnecessary pain, financial worry, and loss that's being experienced in every corner of our country due to our fragmented healthcare system that prioritizes profits over people's health. Today on this call, we'll hear from U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal, the author of the Medicare for All Act of 2019, and a sampling of these brief personal stories from six people representing frontline physicians, patients, workers, employers, and communities of color who are being harmed by our for-profit healthcare system amid the worst pandemic in a century. We'll have time for questions after their brief presentations, and the operator will share how to ask questions at that time. So first, I'm honored to welcome Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, who represents Washington 7th Congressional District and is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
Thank you so much, Melinda, and thank you to you and Public Citizen, Unite Here, PNHP, and all the individuals who are here to give their particular and personal perspective to why Medicare is so important and why guaranteed health care is so important. It's wonderful to be with so many of the partners in this ongoing and necessary and urgent fight to guarantee health care to every person in the country. And it's really because of this movement, this incredible coalition of grassroots doctors, nurses, labor unions, racial justice organizations, and so many more, that the majority of the House Democratic Caucus has co-sponsored my Medicare for All bill in the U.S. House. And it's because of this coalition that last year we got the first ever hearings in the House of Representatives on this bill, on universal health care coverage, and because of your help that two out of three Americans now support Medicare for All. This was probably unthinkable a decade ago when the Affordable Care Act was passed, and it was certainly unthinkable 55 years ago at the inception of Medicare, even as we fought to make Medicare something that would cover everybody. And so if there were ever a time to imagine a brighter and bolder future where healthcare is a human right for all, guaranteed for everyone, it is now. That future has to be as soon as possible. In another 55 years, what will we have achieved that feels unthinkable where we sit now in the middle of a global pandemic that has widened the cracks in a healthcare system that puts 500,000 Americans into bankruptcy every year? Will we look back at our current reality where Black, Brown, Native, Asian, and immigrant communities bore the brunt of this crisis and suffer at the same time, suffered violence and systemic racism, and be able to say that it's behind us? Here's why it's up to us and why I believe we can get there. 55 years ago, the President, House, and Senate all decided that Americans ages 65 and older, individuals who have likely retired after decades of work, who are getting on in years and needing to increasingly rely on our healthcare system, as well as disabled folks, needed a national healthcare system that did not require them to spend their life savings on doctor's visits, prescription drugs, and hospital stays. Today, more than 61 million Americans rely on Medicare. No government program or healthcare program is perfect, but Medicare is a program that has worked exceptionally well for millions for more than 60 years. It's the program that our seniors have come to know and love. That was in 1965, another year of major upheaval and reckoning with our shameful legacies of anti-blackness and racism and inequality. This was the same year of massive protests against the Vietnam War across the nation, the Watts riots roiling Los Angeles, and Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty programs led to the passage of Medicare and Medicaid. This history teaches us that great gains and great progress come out of great strife. We work and work until something happens that breaks the dam open, and we can't wait for change anymore. So we have worked hard to make our case for Medicare for All for years, and we've had major successes. But COVID-19 has brought a completely new lens to our fight for universal health care. COVID-19 makes the case loud and clear in every one of the more than 151,000 lives lost, in every test and hospital bill that threatens to bankrupt the American people and families who are already reeling from an economy where 50 million workers have filed for unemployment. This pandemic is screaming, stop tying healthcare to employment. We need Medicare for All. And next to the sheer devastation of massive numbers of deaths, the most striking injustice has been the tremendous racial disparities of COVID-19 deaths and illness. Black Americans have nearly three times the odds of being hospitalized as white Americans, are far more likely to die during childbirth, and nearly four times more likely to die from COVID-19. Those inequities existed long before the pandemic, of course, because Black Americans, Latinos, and Indigenous people have long been the ones most likely to be uninsured. And for many of these individuals, COVID-19 threatens serious illness and bankruptcy at the same time. I don't have to tell anyone here that even before the pandemic hit us, Americans paid more per capita for healthcare than any other country in the world. We have a patchwork of services, profit motives, corporations, and enormous gaping holes in coverage and costs that leaves millions without access to life-saving treatments. And that patchwork also wastes billions of dollars on administrative costs as doctors waste hours every day fighting with insurance companies to get patients the care they need. You will hear the stories today, and we all know them, the stories of family members and friends and colleagues who have not been able to get the health care they need, have not been able to fill a prescription because they couldn't afford it. And that is an outrage in the richest country in the world. That's why I'm proud to be the lead sponsor of the Medicare for All Act of 2019, which would guarantee health care to everyone, do away with copays, private insurance premiums and deductibles, bring down total costs, provide full coverage for mental health, preventive care, dental, vision, prescription drugs, reproductive services, physical therapy, and long-term care. We were once told that Medicare for All would eliminate the choice that an employer-sponsored healthcare plan offers. But it's funny how no one is making that argument ever since COVID hit. Now, tens of millions of Americans have lost not only their jobs, but also their employer-sponsored insurance. They are left with no choice. We see exactly how unsustainable it is to have a corrupt for-profit healthcare system that ties insurance to employment. And so that is why we know Medicare for All is gaining traction. We know that this idea that we have been fighting hard for is going to happen because of our work. We are going to bring down prescription drug costs for good, because despite the gains of the last 55 years, Medicare, Medicaid, and the Affordable Care Act, Medicare was never intended, as Melinda said, to only cover seniors. It was intended to be expanded over time to everyone. And so today, we still have 87 million people, nearly half of all adults under 65, uninsured or underinsured in America, and that cannot continue. We are in a moment in history, much like 1965, that is calling on us to address injustice and unspeakable corruption and inaction on the part of our leaders. In another 55 years, what will our kids and our grandkids here be celebrating? What did we fight for? What will they teach them about the year 2020? Did we advocate for bold, courageous, and urgent changes to prevent the deaths of more Americans from deadly disease, despair, systemic racism, and anti-blackness? Did we push and challenge those who told us to take justice one tiny step at a time? I believe that together we are in that place where we can finally, finally push healthcare as a human right for all forward. So thank you again for all the work that we have been doing and for staying in this fight. We are ready to win it.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman Jayapal. Next, we will hear from Ada Briceño, who is the co-president of Unite Here Local 11, which represents 20,000 hotel and hospitality workers in Southern California. Ada?
Good morning. My name is Ada Briceño, and I'm co-president of Unite Here Local 11 and DNC member-elect. Our union represents 32,000 hospitality workers across Southern California and Arizona. Our members are the room attendants, dishwashers, and cooks who serve our hotels, stadiums, airports, across our hospitality and tourism industries. These industries have been devastated by the pandemic. 90% of our members have suddenly lost their jobs, and with that comes the fear of the loss of their health care. In the height of the deadly pandemic, the last thing you want to lose is your health insurance. Health insurance should not be tied to a job. For millions of people like our workers, who are predominantly people of color, losing health care coverage is particularly destructive. People of color are more likely to have chronic health conditions such as diabetes because of the lack of access to health care over their lifetime. They tend to live in more cramped housing where it's harder to maintain safe social distancing and keep their families safe. In my union, we see the harmful effects of a broken healthcare system in a struggle for workers' rights, fair pay, and dignity. Each year, health insurance costs keep going up, and it puts our contracts at risk. This forces us to spend countless hours at the bargaining table just to protect the benefits we already have. Medicare for All would free us up to organize for fair wages, retirement benefits, and ending discrimination of all kinds. Healthcare coverage is one of the most challenging negotiations for newly formed unions. If we take health insurance off the bargaining table, more workers could reach union agreements. This would help our labor movement build up and help our unions tackle income inequality on a broader scale. It's clear that our healthcare system is broken. It puts American workers in danger and deadly disadvantages. If healthcare were treated as a basic human right that it is, workers would not be left out in the cold when their health is most at risk, and unions could get back to fighting for all the needs that we have for working people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ada, for sharing those words with us. Now we will hear from Dr. Anna Stratus, who's a Canadian family physician living in the United States, who worked at Woodhull Hospital in Brooklyn, New York during the height of the pandemic. Dr. Stratus?
Thank you so much. I'm a Canadian family physician, and I've been in New York for the past 3 years. And throughout April 2020, I volunteered as an attending physician at one of the Brooklyn hospitals hardest hit by COVID-19. Hundreds of sick patients were flooding into the emergency department who needed immediate care. And while there were early government announcements at that time that care for COVID would be covered, as providers, we didn't know the details or the fine print. And people get so sick so quickly with COVID, we didn't have time to figure out what would be covered and what would not be. We just treated hoping for the best. But this broken for-profit system is ruthless, and my Canadian hopes for the best, they have no place in this system. And I fear that many of the patients I served in the hospital may have gotten huge hospital bills afterward. So many insurers moving so slowly with changes to billing for COVID, people must have been caught in the red tape. I know that is certain. And then there's the issue of failed protection for us essential workers or the heroes. When I was working, there was a shortage of N95 masks. So we were all instructed to make one mask last for 5 days of repeated use. And I could see the terror in my colleagues' eyes. I could hear the fear in their voices while they were FaceTiming with their families out of state. There were a lot of healthcare workers on staff who rightfully would refuse to come to work. And so it left the rest of the people on the front lines I worked with feeling demoralized, underprotected, and undervalued. And similarly, we had to use the same single-use PPE, the gowns and the gloves, across multiple patients, tens, twenties, dozens of patients, and that leaves our patients exposed. And on our rounds, we on the medical team would remark to each other that if any patient came into the emergency department without COVID, by the time they left our hospital, they probably would have COVID. So there was a complete falling apart of universal precautions, which was completely unnecessary. And later I spoke with a nurse who works for a large private hospital in Manhattan, and she said they never had a PPE shortage. So that means that this system only cares about really wealthy people. I'm from Canada, where healthcare is a right, not a privilege. Canada's excellent response to COVID mirrors that of other single-payer health systems around the world, keeping costs reasonable, disseminating a universal message, sharing supplies, lowering bureaucracy, patients, not profit, and the only equitable system is Medicare for all, from all the experiences that I saw in April with COVID-19. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stratus. Now we will hear from Dr. Susan Rogers, who's the president-elect of Physicians for National Health Program. She's recently retired, but she is a volunteer attending hospitalist and internist at a Cook County hospital in Illinois. She previously was the co-director of medical student programs for the Department of Medicine and assistant professor of medicine at Rush University and at Rosalind Franklin University. Dr. Rogers?
Thank you so much for inviting me to share some of my thoughts this morning. Racial inequities in healthcare have been in this country since slavery. And although segregated hospitals are no longer the barrier to healthcare for people of color, our current system has created an unnecessary financial barrier, which denies access to care not just for people of color, but millions of Americans. Their suffering is often hidden in poor, segregated neighborhoods, which disproportionately affect people of color. These are places where people live without access to grocery stores for healthy foods, without access for transportation for jobs, without access to public education, which is appropriately equipped and staffed, and without health care access. The never-ending quest for profit by our current healthcare system allows for wealthier communities and neighborhoods to have an abundance of resources while poorer neighborhoods remain healthcare deserts. The current system promotes building resources such as hospitals where they can make money rather than invest in communities where it is needed. A hospital on the south side of Chicago just announced yesterday that they are closing, and they are thus eliminating care in an area of the city that already lacks adequate healthcare resources. This lack of access to care, the result of institutional racism and blatant disregard for the needs of people of color and those in poverty, has created and sustained these inequities that allows for its continuation and worsening. The current COVID pandemic has actually bared these inequities and put them in open view for all of us to see. They are undeniable and inexcusable. Now is the time to address institutional racism and eliminate the for-profit healthcare system that created and perpetuates these inequities. And now is the time to stop blaming the victims and pretending that they do not exist. Medicare for All will not eliminate all the racial inequities in health, but is clearly a necessary part of the solution. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rogers, for sharing that perspective. Next, we will hear from Sydney Studer, who's a 26-year-old Kansas City native. She was diagnosed with COVID-19 in April and is now living with this disease as a so-called COVID long hauler. Sydney, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, hey, guys. I was diagnosed with COVID-19 on April 8th. I've had symptoms since April 6th, which I believe makes today 115 days of symptoms. In the beginning, my symptoms were a sudden onset of body aches, headaches, body chills, and extreme fatigue. It morphed into loss of appetite, some loss of taste and smell, and the body aches, chills and fatigue continued. A couple of weeks in, I started having shortness of breath. I couldn't speak one sentence without needing to take a big, deep breath. I was communicating with thumbs up and thumbs down with my boyfriend and my parents. I still today cannot speak a few sentences, well, more than a few sentences without taking deep breaths. And I actually haven't talked at all this morning just so I could prepare for this and be able to talk for 2 minutes in a row like I'm doing right now. I was an avid runner before COVID, running about 10 to 20 miles per week. I haven't ran over 2 miles since I got sick, so since sometime late March. And when a particularly bad regression comes, I can't run at all without it exhausting me to the point where I'm in bed for 2 to 3 days. So going from someone who's ran multiple half marathons to not running at all was very extreme for me. COVID long haulers are struggling because we don't know where to turn for answers and healthcare is attached to employment. What if I become so sick I cannot work? How am I going to pay for healthcare? I'm not married. I would have to rely on my own insurance, which for diagnostic tests and the specialists that COVID long haulers are going to need is going to be very expensive. I supported Medicare for All before I got COVID-19, and I support it now. We need to take care of Americans, but we cannot do that with healthcare tied to employment and throwing families and individuals into endless medical debt. I've been sick for 115 days, and I would just ask that they please give me and other COVID long haulers some light and some hope that one day we can return to being the productive members of society that we used to be, instead of being sick for so long like we are now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sydney. Next, we will hear from Lori Trojan, who's a business manager, entrepreneur, mother of two, and grandmother of two from Lawrence, Kansas. She recently lost her employer-based health insurance when she lost her job. Lori?
Thank you, Melinda, and to Public Citizen for allowing me to contribute to the urgent and important issue of Medicare for All. I currently am uninsured due to a job loss. I had an option to extend the coverage provided by my employer, but the monthly payment was more than my car payment, over $400. To access insurance through the marketplace, the monthly payment was more than my house payment. I am unable to afford such payments, and while I remain in good health, it grieves me that others are not as fortunate. My county has a community clinic offering a sliding scale payment for health visits, and I have accessed them 3 times now, a poison ivy episode, a free mammogram, and a dental visit. I feel very lucky that the clinic exists. I was an expatriate in England for years, many years ago. The national health was simply excellent. Both my children were born there, one using the private health option and the second on the national health system. Both experiences were second to none. I do not understand why our country does not offer health care for all as a simple human right. No one should struggle to access medical attention or prescriptive medications to maintain a quality of life. Healthcare for all should not be politicized. Medicare for all is a human right for all. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Lori. And finally, we welcome Jen Kimmich, who's a co-founder of Alchemist Brewery in Stowe, Vermont, to share her perspective as an employer who's been struggling to provide health insurance to her employees, and especially in the pandemic. Jen?
Thank you. My husband John and I provide full health insurance coverage for all of our employees because we believe access to quality health care is a human right. Before the pandemic, we were already struggling with increasing health insurance costs, coupled with the weakening of plans. Our deductibles have been going up, and out-of-pocket expenses have been rising exponentially in recent years, so much that we recently began an in-house loan program to help employees cover their health care costs. Before the pandemic, we had 50 full-time employees. Today, we have 38. But we continue to provide health insurance for all of our furloughed employees and their families. We do this because we care about them. They're like family members. And we can't just take their health care coverage away from people who need it, especially when they need it most. We have lots of families that depend on prescription drugs, semi-regular doctor visits. Many of them have family members with underlying health conditions. The problem for us is that we can't afford to do this indefinitely. Right now, our health care costs, our health insurance costs, are 30% of our payroll. Due to the pandemic, we have cut back production, and our visitor center has been closed for over 4 months. We are uncertain about our path forward, but we do know that we have to cut our health care benefits at some point. We can't lose money indefinitely. But at the same time, we can't simply take this coverage away from people who are struggling with all of the challenges related to the pandemic. The for-profit health insurance industry is hurting small businesses like mine. If we had Medicare for All, we would be able to focus on the recovery of our business, the financial recovery of our business, and also supporting our employees and investing in our community. The best thing we can do for small businesses and working Americans is support Medicare for All. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jen. So we've heard from a range of perspectives, and again, this is just a sampling of the stories. We will open it up if there are any members of the press who have any questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 on your telephone keypad, and I can access your line. Again, that is star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. There are currently no questions in queue.
Okay. Well, if there aren't any questions, I want to thank all of the members of the press who attended today's call, and to Representative Jayapal and all of our speakers who bravely shared their stories with us today. Sadly, we know that these women are not alone. They represent millions of people facing similar suffering and fear due to a for-profit system that does not have to be this way. The implementation of Medicare 55 years ago was an incredible step forward, but it has never been more clear from this pandemic that we as a country need to make good on that down payment and finally provide Medicare for All. There's a growing grassroots movement demanding just that, with cities and counties across the country passing resolutions demanding Medicare for All, local coalitions meeting with their members of Congress, and much more. We will share audio from today's presentations as well as videos recorded by each of our speakers we'll send that right after the call. In addition, many organizations that make up this coalition are sharing more stories on social media today with the hashtag #IneedMFA and 55 years of Medicare. And if there are any members of the press who want to write stories and are looking for a particular angle of personal stories, our organizations can probably find those for you, because tragically these stories are just all too prevalent in our country right now. So are there any other questions, operator, that have come in?
We have no other questions in queue.
Okay, thank you. Well, then, thank you again for joining us, and we will end the call. Thank you so much.
That concludes this morning's teleconference. You may now disconnect your line.
Thank you to everyone who's joined us.